Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an education service in public interest, and I'm your editor, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the bird flu epidemic when we come back. You know, when people call the law school, they ask me how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air. Now, keep in mind that most of the topics that you hear on this program, I teach in detail in one of my 8 schools here at the law school. For example, when you hear me talking about the common law, it was Alfred the Great that codified that common law back in 872 AD into 49 principles or statutes, of which 22 of those principles of law are incorporated into our federal constitution and Bill of Rights. You know, the common law was taken from the Mosaic law. The Mosaic law was given to Moses out at Mount Sinai, and it's recorded in Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8. And it includes negligence, insurance, and taxes, such as income and property and Social Security taxes. Did you know that? Now, these IRS tax laws are a counterfeit of the tithing laws of Scripture, and they work a theft on everyone who participates in them. You know, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and Social Security and property taxes. And, you know, that's the basis of my tax and status school, the Mosaic Law. That's why I contend that we owe this income tax and the Social Security tax because we have contracted into it. We agreed to it. Maybe we ought to think about changing that. If you'd like to learn more about tax and status, why don't you write from my free General Law CD package. Now, that's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were reviewing the Foreign Affairs magazine put out by the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR. The elitists, one of the 3 top think tank clubs on planet Earth. The CFR, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderbergers. These are the people that make policy worldwide. And one of the policies is to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 or 60 years. And they haven't been able to do it by war, although war is a valuable contributor. They want to establish a world ruling government through the United Nations, a one world or a new world order. You heard George Bush Sr. when he was president, he used to refer to that new world order quite often. His boy, George Jr., is now in office, and he's working mightily as a member of Skull and Bones, the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderbergers, doing the best he can, working as hard as he can to protect the American people and give us perpetual war for perpetual peace, and now a world pandemic called flu. That's what we've been looking at this week, is this bird flu pandemic. I mentioned a couple of times, I want to keep FEMA and the government as far away from me as I can get. I watched how FEMA and the government handled New Orleans, and I can see that they can do anything half as well for twice as much. I don't want to spend the money, and I want a better job done, so I'm going to do it myself. So when it comes to this bird flu, I think I'll just take care of George Gordon and George Gordon's family. I don't want any help from you. I don't want any help from government, and I'm just suggesting that maybe you might want to think about those lines like I am. Just think about, gee, maybe I could take better care of myself for less money and get a better job done than relying upon government. Now, I told you in the last program as we closed that this human-to-human transmission of H5N1 has already occurred according to the World Health Organization. There's been one confirmed case. Well, now if there's one confirmed case, then that tells me that the genie is already out of the jar, doesn't it? That's why I said a little earlier, I think that this bird flu propaganda blitz campaign over here is more than news. It is propaganda. It is prophecy. It is a sales job. They're selling us this flu. And there are some very significant ramifications coming from it. Even if you never get the flu yourself, you never get sick, you got some real major problems coming up. If this thing comes to pass, this is going to be a traumatic experience for all of us. You don't have to live through Hurricane Katrina to feel the effects of it. Hell, I do that every time I fill up my car with that $3 gas. Yeah, and I get an opportunity to feel the effects of Katrina. And as the winter wears on, I think all of us are going to feel those effects more and more. I think this bird flu is going to have some far-reaching effects, whether or not you actually get your house blown down or not. Now, addressing and understanding the H5N1 virulence in humans has also proved elusive. When it first appeared in Hong Kong in 1997, the virus killed 35% of those that it was known to have infected. Less severe cases may not have been reported. The Z strain of the disease, which emerged in early 2003, killed 68% of those known to have been infected. In H5N1 cases since December of 2004, however, the mortality has been 36%. How can the fluctuation over time be explained? One disturbing possibility is that H5N1 has begun adapting to its human hosts, becoming less deadly but easier to spread. In the spring of 2005, in fact, H5N1 infected 17 people throughout Vietnam, resulting in only 3 deaths. Leading flu experts argue that this sort of phenomenon has in the past been a prelude to human influenza epidemics. Let's just try 3 out of 17. How's that? 3 divided by 17 is 17%. 17% mortality. Now, you remember that the most lethal flu epidemic in the history of mankind occurred in 1918 with a death rate here in the United States of 0.6%. The lowest death rate so far from this bird flu in its human-to-human transmission form. Now, remember, they've been telling us on the news media it hasn't gone human-to-human yet. Now, CFR tells us now we've got one confirmed case and we have 17 other cases that are suspect of human-to-human transmission. How do you like that, boys and girls? As they say down at the Blue Room, when the dealer deals the cards out, pick them up and read them and weep. Now, the medical histories of those who have died from H5N1 influenza are disturbingly similar to accounts of sufferers of the Spanish flu in 1918-19. You know, we keep getting these correlations. Have you noticed that in all of these articles, there's these little signals that come up. The Spanish flu came from birds. This bird flu comes from birds. This Spanish flu and bird flu today both attack directly the lungs, cause bleeding. You know, it sounds like to me that all we've done is taken the Spanish flu, made a very toxic biological weapon, and then we gave it a new name, H5N1, and we're unleashing it upon the world a second time. That's what it sounds like to me. Now, call me a cynic, but you know, that's what I'm seeing here as I read paragraph after paragraph. That's what it sounds like. So when it first appeared in Hong Kong, remember, 1997, the virus killed 35% of those. That Spanish flu, it never killed 35% or 20% or 17%. It was below 1%. And it was the worst thing that we've seen since the bubonic plague. And these guys are telling us 17%, 35%, 54%, 68% lethality. If that doesn't scare the bejesus out of you, you're brain dead. Especially when you consider that one-third of the people in the world in 1918 came down with the disease. Now, of course, the good news is 2 people out of 3 never got it. The bad news is 1 person out of every 3 got flu. And 0.6% of them that got it died, totaling 50 to 100 million people, depending upon who you're reading lately. So these medical histories of those who have died from H5N1 influenza are disturbingly similar to accounts of sufferers of the Spanish flu of 1918-19. Otherwise, healthy people are completely overcome by the virus, developing all of the classic flu symptoms, coughing, headache, muscle pain, nausea, dizziness, diarrhea, high fever, depression, and loss of appetite. But these are just some of the effects. Yeah, it's just some of the effects. Victims also suffer from pneumonia, encephalitis, meningitis, acute respiratory distress, internal bleeding, and hemorrhaging. An autopsy of a child who died of the disease in Thailand last year revealed that the youth's lungs had been torn apart in the all-out war between disease-fighting cells and the virus. Now, according to test tube studies, Z-plus ought to be vulnerable to the anti-flu drug which Roche Pharmaceuticals Company markets in the United States under the brand name of Tamiflu. Yet Tamiflu was given to many of those who ultimately succumbed to the virus. Wait a minute. Let me underline that, boys and girls. Tamiflu. The best hope that you have from modern medicine and the pharmaceutical industry. Yet, let me read it again. Yet Tamiflu was given to many of those who ultimately succumbed to the virus. And it is believed that medical complications induced by the virus, including acute respiratory distress syndrome, may have prevented the drug from helping. It is also difficult to tell whether the drug contributed to the survival of those who took it and lived, although higher doses and more prolonged treatment may have a greater impact in fighting the disease. A team of Thai clinicians recently concluded that the optimal treatment for case patients with suspected H5 infections is not known. We don't know. And lacking any better options, the World Health Organization has recommended that countries stockpile Tamiflu to the best of their ability. In other words, buy as much as you can. It helps the bottom line of Roche Company. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is doing so. But supplies of the drug are limited, and it's hard to manufacture. Now, if you want to rely upon Tamiflu, you don't get after it. I think I'll pass. I think I'll just rely upon myself. I think I'll rely upon charcoal and silver. I think I'll rely upon vitamins and minerals. I think I'll rely upon the law of God and stay away from the pigs and the ducks and the unclean and keep the clean and the unclean separated. And I think I'll do a lot better. You know, we'll come back to our class reunion. Let's have a class reunion next year about this time. And let's talk about this again. What about developing Z Plus vaccine? This magic silver bullet. Well, unfortunately, there's only more gloom in the forecast. God, there's only more bad news. You see, the total number of companies willing to produce influenza vaccine has plummeted in recent years from more than two dozen in 1980 to just a handful in 2004. Now, there are many reasons for the decline in vaccine producers. One is a spate of corporate mergers in the 1990s, for example, and it reduced the number of major international pharmaceutical companies. And then number two, the financial risk of investing in vaccines is also a key factor. In 2003, the entire market for all vaccines from polio to measles to hepatitis and influenza amounted to just $5.4 billion. Let's underline that. All of these vaccines for everything, along with Tamiflu and all the rest of the flu paraphernalia that goes along with it, is about $5.5 billion. Although that sum may seem considerable, it is less than 2% of the global pharmaceutical market of $337.3 billion. So you can see, boys and girls, that flu as a business venture is going to come in way down the line, isn't it? I mean, hell, we can make billions of dollars on some of these super drugs like Nexium. We only make $5 billion, and that's the entire industry. That's the entire, all of the pharmaceutical companies combined sell $5.5 billion worth of vaccines. Well, if I was a businessman, I wouldn't waste my time on it either. Unlike chemical compounds, vaccines and most other biological products are difficult to make, and they can easily become contaminated. And there's also a large and litigious anti-vaccine constituency. Yeah, I'm one of those. And some people believe that vaccines cause harmful side effects. Yep, I'm one of those. Such as Alzheimer's disease and autism. Yep, and I'm one of those. Adding considerable liability costs to manufacturers' bottom lines. That's a lot. That's not true. There isn't $1 worth of liability added to the manufacturer's bottom line in the United States of America. Now, I can't speak for the rest of you people in the world, but in this country, the pharmaceutical companies can shoot you up with anything and kill you, and you can't sue them. They've been granted immunity just like the nuclear industry, by Congress, no less. God bless those congressmen, especially the Republicans, especially Dick Armey. Remember the name Dick Armey from Texas? He's the one that did it. What about developing a Z plus vaccine? Z plus vaccine? You can write that one off, boys and girls. Now, the production of influenza vaccines holds particular drawbacks for companies. Flu vaccines must be made rapidly, increasing the risk of contamination or other errors. Let me underline that. It increases the risk of contamination and other errors in the vaccine. So you may be getting something in your vaccine that might cause some side effects like Guillain-Barré syndrome or something like that. That's what happened with the swine flu, remember? Hey, you run risks, you know. Life is a risk. You know, you got to make your choices. And the choices that you make is Tamiflu and vaccine or silver and charcoal. That's the choice that you got to make. For God's sake, don't change your lifestyle. I mean, don't quit drinking and smoking and eating pig and shrimp and lobster, for crying out loud, just because of a crummy flu scare. But I think I will. Yeah, the older you get, the more you realize that I don't have eternal life. See, when I was 19, I had eternal life, and I used to fly my airplane under bridges and power lines. When I got to be 30, I recognized that I might not have as much eternal life as I thought I had, so I began flying my airplane over the bridges and the power lines until I got to be about 50. Then I realized that the family that flies together dies together, so I stopped flying airplanes. I guess that's what they call wisdom. It comes with age. Now, because of the seasonal nature of the flu, a new batch of influenza vaccine must be produced every year. And should sales in a given year prove disappointing, flu vaccines cannot be stockpiled for sale in a subsequent season because by then the viruses will have evolved. In addition, the manufacturing process of flu vaccines is uniquely complex. The pharmaceutical companies must grow viral samples on live chicken eggs, which must be reared under rigorous hygienic conditions. And research is underway on reverse genetics and cellular level production techniques that might prove cheaper, faster, and less contamination prone than using eggs. But for the foreseeable future, manufacturers are stuck with the current laborious method. After cultivation, samples of the viruses must be harvested. The age and end characteristics must be shown to produce antibodies in test animals and human volunteers. And tests must prove that the vaccine is not contaminated. Only then can mass production commence. But I can stockpile colloidal silver, and I can stockpile my activated charcoal. I can stockpile vitamin C and other vitamins and minerals, and they don't spoil over time. And I can stockpile my coffee and my chicken, boys and girls, and these guys can't. Now, that's another reason why I like this Mosaic Law program. It gives me a better shot at, and here's God's promise. Remember, I told you this in the last program. I said, in Exodus 15:26, God said, I will not put these diseases upon you. You practice my law, you practice my commandments, I won't put this disease upon you. Now, that tells us that this disease comes from God, and that it's God that puts this disease upon us. It's God that sends Hurricane Katrina. It's God that sends the devourer. It's God that sends droughts and floods and disease and plague and war. Not George Bush, not the Republicans, and not the Jews, and not the Arabs. Now, we give credit to the Republicans and George Bush for all of these evils and wickedness that comes upon us. I never heard anybody blame God for Hurricane Katrina. In fact, if you suggest to somebody, well, how come your God didn't protect you from Hurricane Katrina? They call that blasphemy. They want to tar and feather you and run you out of town on a rail. I can't help but watch a hurricane like Katrina bury New Orleans and then ask the question, well, geez, where in the hell were you Muslims? Weren't there any of you Muslims down there praying to Allah, please protect us from this hurricane? Wasn't there any Buddhists in New Orleans praying, Buddha, Buddha, do something? Wasn't there any Christians down there saying, Jesus, Jesus, do something quick? All I can conclude is that all of your gods out there couldn't protect you from a hurricane, but the God of the Bible says he can and says he will if you practice my law. Could it be that you people down in New Orleans and on the Gulf Coast aren't practicing the law of God? Could it be that you guys are outside the Ten Commandments? Could it be that you're practicing a little extra adultery, fornication, maybe eating a little extra pig for breakfast, maybe you're not practicing the clean, unclean laws? I know they're all abolished, nailed to the cross with Jesus and taken out of the way, but I'm just throwing it out as a sample, as an example, because it's pretty obvious that your God was either one, powerless and couldn't help you, or two, pissed off at you and laid your ass away. Now, one or the other. Now, that's just my way of saying it. But it gets bigger, and it gets better, and it gets more worser than this. The H5N1 strain of avian flu poses an additional problem. The virus is 100% lethal to chickens, and that includes chicken eggs. Boys and girls, are you paying attention? Wake up here. The virus is incubated in what? Chicken eggs. That's your added problem. And it's 100% lethal to chickens, and that includes the chicken eggs. It's lethal to the live chicken eggs. And it took researchers 5 years of hard work to devise a way to grow the 1997 version of the H5N1 virus on eggs without killing them. Although there have been technological improvements since then, there is no guarantee that an emerging pandemic strain could be cultivated fast enough. Now, do you want to rely upon Pfizer and Merck? Huh? You want to bet your life that there's going to be enough of this vaccine available for you in time? In the current system, all influenza vaccines must be quickly made following a World Health Organization meeting of flu experts held every February. So every February, the WHO group meets, and it's at that gathering that the scientists scrutinize all of the available information on the flu strains known to be circulating in the world. They then try to predict which strains are most likely to spread across every continent in the next 6 to 9 months. This year, the World Health Organization committee chose 3 human flu strains of types H3N2 and H1N1 to be the basis of the next vaccine. Samples of the chosen strains are delivered to pharmaceutical companies around the world for vaccine production, and the vaccines are hopefully available to the public by September or October, a few months after influenza typically strikes Asia in the early summer. Europe and the Americas are usually hit shortly thereafter, in September, because viruses constantly change themselves. The process cannot be executed earlier in the year. And although new technology may allow, notice the word that's underlined, it may allow, not certain, just may, maybe, could be, we hope, an increase in production capacity, manufacturers have never made more than 300 million doses of flu vaccine in a single year. The slow pace of production means that in the event of an H5N1 flu pandemic, millions of people would likely be infected well before vaccines could be distributed. Uh-oh, that don't sound too good. Listen, boys and girls, they only make 300 million doses of this stuff a year. Worldwide. That's it. And by the time this flu comes to pass and they make the vaccine, it's going to kill the very eggs that they make it with. So they had to come up with a special technique that not everybody knows about because it's patented. You want to bet your life on this kind of a crazy patchwork system? Well, of course, if you're an evolutionist, you don't have any other choice. So get after it. Get with it. Now, there's a couple of three others of us over here that believe that there is a God and that there is a purpose behind life and that there is a creator of life. And this guy said, hey, boys and girls, I am the creator of biology. And I know how this works. And I know how to kill viruses. And viruses are killed with silver. Kills them every time. So on contact, the silver kills the virus. So as soon as I get the virus, I don't care what kind of virus it is, So just to be on the safe side, every so often I go upstairs and I whip out my jug of colloidal silver, pour myself a little drink, and I drink it down. Kind of like taking vitamin C. Every once in a while, I snatch up a few vitamin C's. Now today, I feel pretty good. I really don't need any vitamin C or colloidal silver, but after I do this program, I think I'll run upstairs, take a little colloidal silver, maybe take a couple of charcoals, maybe take a couple of vitamin C's, and go to work. Get out and do something constructive. And I'll keep practicing the Ten Commandments and the health laws and see whether or not this God in heaven that says, hey, Gordon, I won't put any of these diseases upon you if you'll practice my commandments. I come along and say, shucks, I got something to gain and nothing to lose. So I'm going to practice the law of God. And what's the worst thing that can happen to me? I get the damn flu and die. That's the worst thing can happen. And then you can say, hey, that Gordon over there, he wasn't not screwing his neighbor's wife. He missed out on the brass ring. He missed out on his shot at adultery with the neighbor girl over here. And he died of flu anyway. Yep, that could happen. But I think it'll happen less often than with the guys that are practicing adultery and theft and murder and Mardi Gras and 55 other things that are going on in New Orleans and Key West. I think it'll happen less often. Now, let's come back a year from now and see if that's true. Now, there's a story here called Global Reach. We're going to take that up when we come back. I'm here at the break called Global Reach. Remember I said, hey, there's more to this. There's more to this than just the flu. Because even if you don't get the flu and you've got millions of other people that do have it, and they start shutting down the airlines, and they start enforcing quarantines, and you can't travel from here to there, and so on and so forth, that could get pretty hairy for your stock and your bond portfolio, and a whole lot of other things, like maybe your job, maybe the mortgage payments on your house and your cars and everything else. We'll cover that when we come back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, it's easy. Just go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto it, and there it is. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. We teach 8 subjects, 8 schools here. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. You can come here to school if you're a Catholic, Protestant, or Jew. We don't care. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. You don't even have to come to school. We'll take the school to you right there at your home. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. So if you don't listen to this program on a local radio station, you can just go to the archives on the website and you can listen to it at any time of day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at your listening convenience. Keep in mind, The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just go to the telephone and pick it up and call 417-273-4967 and ask for yours. It's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. And then the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, go to our website, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, there's another factor that comes in here. Even if you can avoid the sickness and disease, even if the hurricane does not blow your house down, you may find side effects like the electricity is off, there's no running water, and you can't get gasoline for your car. So before the hurricane comes, remember, boys and girls, gasoline in the car, stockpile some water, get some candles out. There may not be any electricity for a week or two. I know it's a wild new idea that FEMA might not be able to serve your needs. The scarcity of flu vaccine, although a serious problem, is actually of very little relevance to most of the world. Even if the pharmaceutical companies manage to produce enough effective vaccine in time to save some of the privileged lives in Europe, North America, and Japan, and maybe a few other wealthy nations, more than 6 billion people living in the developing countries will still go unvaccinated. And stockpiles of Tamiflu and other anti-influenza drugs would also do absolutely nothing for those 6 billion people, at least 30% of whom, and possibly half, would likely get infected in just such a pandemic. Resources are so scarce that both wealthy and poor countries would be foolish to count on the generosity of their neighbors during a global outbreak. Were the United States to miraculously overcome its vaccine production problems and produce ample supplies for every American citizen, Washington would probably deny the vaccine to neighbors such as Mexico, Canada, or anybody else in the world, since governments tend to reserve vaccine supplies for their own citizens during emergencies. Were the United States to falter, it would probably not be able to rely upon Canadian or European generosity as it did just last year. And when the United Kingdom suspended the license for the Chiron Corporation's UK production facility for flu vaccine due to the contamination problems, Canada and Germany bailed the United States out, supplying additional doses until the French company Sanofi Pasteur could manufacture more. Even with this assistance, however, the United States vaccine needs were not fully met until February of 2005, when the flu season was at its end. Now, in the event of a deadly influenza pandemic, it is very doubtful that any of the world's wealthy nations would be able to meet the needs of their own citizenry, much less those of any other countries. Domestic vaccine purchasing and distribution schemes currently assume that only the very young and the very elderly and the immunocompromised, that's the HIV people, are at risk or serious risk of dying from the flu. That assumption would have led health leaders in 1918 to vaccinate all of the wrong people. Then the young and the old fared relatively well, while those aged 20 to 35, and today typically the lowest priority for vaccination, suffered the most deaths from the Spanish flu. And so far, the H5N1 influenza looks like it could have a similar effect. Its human victims have all fallen into age groups that would not be on national vaccine priority lists. And because H5N1 has never circulated among humans before, it is highly conceivable that all ages could be susceptible. I'm going to underline that where it says it has never circulated among humans before. I'm not so sure that's true. I'm a cynic. I'm not so sure, but what this H5N1 is in fact a biological weapon that was taken from the Spanish flu of 1918. Maybe it's not the same Spanish flu. Maybe it's been upgraded to be a super flu, a super virus, even better, killing more people faster, more efficiently than the 1918 flu. That's just the cynic in me, I guess. It is highly conceivable that all ages could be susceptible, and every year, trusting that the flu will kill only the usual risk groups, the United States plans for 185 million vaccine doses. If that guess were wrong, if all Americans were at risk, the nation could need at least 300 million doses, and that's the entire world supply. That means we're going to take it all, and everybody else in the world gets none. Now, do you think that's going to happen? Hey, you Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders, and Europeans, just put your head between your knees and kiss her goodbye, because we Americans are taking it all. Are you guys going to sit still for that? I say let the Americans have it all. Let them shoot themselves up and kill themselves with the flu. You think for yourselves and do something a little more intelligent and save yourselves. There would thus be a global scramble for vaccine. Boy, that's an understatement. A global scramble for vaccine. Some governments might well block foreign access to supplies produced on their soil and bar vaccine export. Since little vaccine is actually made in the United States, this could prove a real problem for Americans in particular. Facing such limited supplies, the United States, European, and Japanese governments might give priority to vaccinating heads of state around the world in hopes of limiting social chaos. But who among the elite would be eligible? Would their families be included? How could such a global triage be executed fairly? A similar calculus might be necessary for countries engaged in significant military operations. Troop movements would certainly help spread the disease, just as it did in World War I, which aided the growth of the 1918-19 Spanish flu. Back then, the flu wreaked havoc on combatant nations. In the summer of 1918, influenza killed far more soldiers than did bombs, bullets, or mustard gas. By October, some 46% of the French army was off of the battlefield, ailing, dying, or caring for flu victims. Influenza death tolls among the various military forces generally ranged from 5 to 10%, but some segments fared even worse, and historian John Barry has reported that 22% of the Indian members of the British military died. 22% of the Indian members of the British military died of the Spanish flu. Now, in the event of a modern pandemic, the U.S. Department of Defense, with the lessons of World War I in mind, would undoubtedly insist that U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan be given top access to vaccines and anti-flu drugs. Well, that makes sense. That's what they did in 1917 in order to get the flu started in the first place. That ought to help spread the flu to Iraq and Afghanistan and to all of their neighbors in a lot less time. While 200,000 more are permanently based elsewhere overseas, all of them would potentially be in danger. In late March, for example, North Korea conceded that it was suffering from large-scale H7N1 outbreak taking place within miles of some 41,000 U.S. military forces. It is impossible to predict how much a pandemic influenza would affect U.S. operations in Iraq, Afghanistan, Colombia, or any other place. Armed forces throughout the world would face similar issues. Most would no doubt pressure their governments for preferential access to vaccine and medications. In addition, more than a quarter of some African armies and police forces are HIV positive. Let me read that again. Did you know that more than a quarter, that's more than 25% of some African armies and police are already HIV positive? Perhaps making them especially vulnerable to influenza's lethal impact. Social instability resulting from troop and police losses there would likely be particularly acute in those areas. Such a devastating disease would clearly have profound implications for international relations and the global economy. With death tolls rising, vaccines and drugs in short supply, and the potential for the virus to spread further, governments would feel obliged to take drastic measures that could inhibit travel, limit worldwide trade, and alienate their neighbors. In fact, the Z-plus virus has already demonstrated its disruptive potential on a limited scale. Listen to this. In July of 2004, for example, when the Z-plus strain reemerged in Vietnam after a three-month hiatus, officials in the northern province of Bac Giang charged that the Chinese smugglers were selling old and sickly birds in Vietnamese markets, where more than 10 tons of chickens were smuggled daily. Let me underline that. Boys and girls, 10 tons of Chinese chickens are smuggled into Vietnam every day. And the Vietnamese complained that the Chinese smugglers were smuggling in the sick birds from China. Now, the Chinese authorities, in charge of policing their side of the porous border, more than 1,000 kilometers long, countered that it was impossible to inspect all of the shipments, and such conflicts are now limited to the movement of livestock. But if a pandemic develops, they could well escalate to a ban on trade and human movement altogether. Now, although there is little evidence that isolation measures have ever slowed the spread of influenza, it's just too contagious. Most governments would likely resort to quarantines in a pandemic crisis. Indeed, on April the 1st, 2005, President George W. Bush issued an executive order authorizing the use of quarantine inside the United States and permitting the isolation of international visitors suspected of carrying influenza. And in one country, if one country implements such orders, others will surely follow suit, bringing legal international travel to a standstill. The SARS, that is the severe acute respiratory syndrome virus, remember that story last year? Which was less dangerous than a pandemic flu by many orders of magnitude, virtually shut down Asia travel for 3 months. They only had 57 deaths. Now, as great as they would be, the economic consequences of travel restrictions, quarantines, and medical care would be well outstripped by losses in productivity. In a typical flu season, just the average everyday garden variety flu, productivity costs are 10 times greater than all other flu-related costs combined. That's just a typical year. And the decline in productivity is usually due directly to worker illness and absenteeism. During a pandemic, productivity losses would be even more disproportionate because entire workplaces, entire schools, theaters, and public facilities would be shut down to limit human-to-human spread of the virus. Workers' illnesses also would likely be even more severe and last even longer than normal. Frankly, there are no models of social response to such a pandemic that have managed to factor in fully the potential effect of human productivity, and it's therefore impossible to reckon accurately the potential global economic impact. But we can take a look at what's going on in the southern part of Africa. 14 nations down there have an epidemic of AIDS. And in some of those countries, when they hire somebody for a job, they hire two. Two, because they know that with AIDS affecting one-third of the population, then in order to maintain productivity, they got to have a workforce that's at least one-third larger than what they have, because they're going to lose one-third of their workforce every year. That's the way they do it down in Africa right now, because of AIDS. Hey, boys and girls, the side effects from this flu are likely to be worse than the flu itself. Boys and girls, the side effects from Hurricane Katrina were far worse than the hurricane itself. The hurricane blew some shingles off to knock down a few buildings. It was the flooding that destroyed New Orleans. The hurricane didn't destroy the houses in Mississippi at Biloxi. It was the tidal wave caused by the hurricane that caused the damage. And the tidal wave didn't hit everywhere. The tidal surge. See, we call those tidal surges over here, over on the other side of the world, you call that a tsunami. Now, are you ready and prepared for the consequences? No, people in New Orleans were prepared for the hurricane, they just weren't prepared for the flood. The people down in Miami, Florida were prepared for Hurricane Wilma, they just weren't prepared for the gas lines and the shortages and the power outages. They weren't prepared for that. They never thought of that. They followed FEMA's instructions. FEMA evidently didn't think about, hey, boys and girls, you got to stockpile a little gasoline behind the garage. You got to have some candles. The power may be out for a week or 2 weeks. You better fill the car with gas before the hurricane comes, because after the hurricane, there might not be any electricity down at the Circle K store to pump the gas. I don't know. I guess I'm just an old farmer out here, and us farmers over here, we have to prepare for it. I went through this one time. I'll share a little story with you. A tornado came through our neighborhood. In fact, it came pretty close here to the farm, and it knocked out a bunch of power poles. Now, I live out here in the countryside, and when the power poles get knocked down, they reestablish power in Mountain Home and Harrison and Springfield and Gainesville before they ever think about us farmers. They don't come out here and put up the power poles for one or two farms. They want to put up the power poles so that they can service thousands and tens of thousands of urban customers. I was out of power here, for 7 days. Now, I want to remind you that my water comes out of a hole in the ground called a well. And I got a rude awakening. Do you know that for 7 days I didn't have any water? And I never thought of that before, because, you know, I always went over to the faucet and turned on the faucet. And yeah, maybe it didn't work. And I would go out and I would fix my pump or fix my electric system on the pump, and it would run again in a day or two, and that would be the end of it. I didn't have any water here for 7 days. Now, boys and girls, you only have to live without water for 7 days, one time in your lifetime, and by God, I'll guarantee you from then on, you'll be thinking about water. It'll always be on your mind. Water, water. Where are we going to get water? It's always on my mind. That's why I have a water system here now. That's why I built the tower. That's why I put a 600-gallon water supply up on the top of the tower. It's so that when the power goes off for 7 days, I've got a surplus of water. I've got a bubble in the water line. I've got some water. I'm upgrading that now. I'm going from 600 gallons to 2,500 gallons. Then I'm putting in a cistern that holds 2 acre-feet, 650,000 gallons of water. That's what I'm doing. That's so that I don't have to rely upon FEMA to bring me a bag of ice and a bottle of water. I don't need a bag of ice and a bottle of water, boys and girls, to maintain my standard of living, to feed my livestock, to water my livestock. I got to have some water here. I better take care of myself. I don't think George Bush, FEMA, and the Republicans can work out for me my water problem on my farm. But I can, and I did, and I'm not concerned about a water shortage here any longer. Now, I know it's kind of wild and off the wall, but I thought I'd share it with you. Now, the potential for a pandemic comes at a time when the world's public health systems are severely taxed and have long been in decline. And this is true in both rich and poor countries alike. The Bush administration recognized this weakness following the anthrax scare back in 2001, which underscored the poor ability of federal and local health agencies to respond to bioterrorism or epidemic threats. And since that year, Congress has approved $3.7 billion to strengthen the nation's public health infrastructure. In 2003, the White House also took several steps to improve the nation's capacity to respond to a flu pandemic. It increased funding for the CDC's flu program by 242% to $41.6 million in 2004. Now remember, in 2004, they gave them $41 million. In 2005, they've earmarked $4 billion, B with boy, billion dollars, $4 billion. And that's to give the National Institute of Health an additional 320% in funds for flu-related research and development for a total of $65 million. Increased spending on the Food and Drug Administration licensing capacity for flu vaccines and drugs by 173% to $2.6 million, and spent an additional $80 million to create new stockpiles of Tamiflu and other anti-influenza drugs. You know, we got an old saying down here on the farm. It's like urinating into the wind. All that gets you is wet pants. When you need to urinate, boys and girls, you need to turn downwind. Always remember that. Never eat yellow snow and never urinate into the wind. You know, we've just covered several paragraphs here that tell you that the total world production of this anti-flu vaccine can only come after February. You got a short window. You only make 300 million doses a year. Boys and girls, if Americans all got a dose of that, nobody else in the world would get any, and most of it is manufactured outside of our borders. So for Americans, it's put your head between your knees and kiss her goodbye. You better come up with a better plan than that. And you can't get a flu vaccine that's going to take care of you for the next 4 years. You can stockpile silver for the next 4 years. You can make your own colloidal silver for the next 4 years. You can use the Ten Commandments and the law of God, and you can get God to to beg off and leave you alone and not put this disease on you. There's a lot of things you can do to protect yourself from the flu beside Tamiflu and snake venom and monkey pus in the form of flu vaccine. Now, of course, if you want to rely upon FEMA and the Republicans, you'll get after it. But after reading this report over here, you'd have to be brain dead. Brain dead. I mean dead from your rectum both ways to follow that kind of a program. Honest to God, I'm not sure that Americans can think any longer. There was a time, though, in America when Americans were pretty bright people. We could figure out cause and effect, and we could look ahead, you know, a couple of years and say, hey, if we do this, we're probably going to get that bad effect later on. Hey, you can't do that today. People are out here buying houses in the middle of the housing bubble. They're not able to figure that out. I'm telling you, boys and girls, it's time for you and I to start waking up. If you can't think, then maybe you can only die. Despite all of this, a recent event underscored the United States, the tremendous vulnerability that we face. In October of 2004, the American College of Pathologists mailed a collection of mystery microbes prepared by a private lab to 5,000 laboratories in 18 countries for them to test as a part of their recertification. Now, the mailing should have been routine procedure. But instead, in March of 2005, a Canadian laboratory discovered that the test kits included a sample of H2N2 flu, a strain that had killed 4 million people worldwide in 1957. H2N2 has not been in circulation since 1968, meaning that hundreds of millions of people lack immunity to it. Had any of these samples leaked or been exposed to the environment, the results could have been catastrophic. On learning of the error, the World Health Organization called for the immediate destruction of all of these test kits. Now, miraculously, none of these viruses managed to escape any of these laboratories. 5,000 labs got this. Now listen, the other day these clowns went out and picked up this Spanish flu virus that killed 100 million people, and they've got it circulating today in their laboratories. And this is the mentality of the mental defectives that are running the National Health Service in the United States. And you want to buy in to that kind of insanity? Time's up. We'll finish this program tomorrow night, right here. You heard it first. On the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Just go to our website for the instructions, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. See you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.